You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello, and welcome to another Movie Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx, and I am here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. Our horror film for today is Hellraiser, the 1987 Clive Barker classic.
Is it fair to call everything a classic?
I don't know. I feel like this one is considered...
It's infamous, for sure. I mean, it's probably a classic, but I'm just saying we've called every one we've done a classic so far.
Well, it was just kind of funny with some of the earlier ones, but this one I actually feel, at least for people who were around, you know, born in the 80s, pretty much have all seen it. But an unfaithful wife encounters the zombie of her dead lover. Demons are pursuing him after he escaped their sadomasochistic underworld. That's my October horror noise.
Dun, dun, dun.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Okay, so I actually picked this because I wasn't sure if I had seen it or not. And then after we started watching it, I kind of realized, yeah, it's been a long time, but I have seen this.
That was good.
Well, I know, like, last week when we did American Mary, it was like, why is this even considered a horror movie? Like, at least this one, I feel, was a legitimate try at a horror movie.
Wow.
Well, there's a few things that I didn't quite understand, and I don't know. That wife just really bugged me, besides the fact that she could probably pass as, like, David Bowie's stunt double.
Oh, my God. That hair.
But
my God, that hair.
I don't know. She was just the worst. She bugged me. But overall, you know, basically, if you're not familiar, she's married to
Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, right. What the hell was his name? She's married to Larry.
Great name, Larry.
And I believe, you know, she's the second wife or whatever, because he has a daughter from a previous wife. She is also in the film. But Julia, his wife, used to have an affair with his brother, Frank. Now, the movie opens up with Frank. They don't specify where he is, but he's in some kind of, you know, Chinatown or some kind of Asian country where he's buying this mysterious box. And it's like, oh, you want it? Here you go. You know, that kind of stuff. And then you see him, and he starts unlocking and figuring out the box, and then it summons the demons that take him down to their sadomasochistic dungeon or whatever, hell or whatever it is. And he, let's back up a little bit. Then Larry and Julia come back to what was Larry's, I took it as it was like his childhood home.
That's,
and he was like, oh my God, I haven't been here in so long. And it's kind of run down, and they find out that all right, it's totally run down.
A dump.
It is terrible. And she's like, I don't want to stay here. And he's like, oh, but it'll be fun, blah, blah, blah. And you can tell that Frank was kind of hiding out there. And when they were trying to move in, Larry cut his hand and he went running upstairs. Now, I don't know why at the very tip top of the house, there was three rooms. One was, like, obviously storage. One, I don't think they've ever even went into.
It was a bathroom.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the one that Frank spawned in to become the zombie that needed blood to reform, that room looked like it had been on fire in the past. Like,
it was an old dingy attic.
Right. But
it had been on fire too.
I don't know. I feel like before you're going to move in, you're going to, like, get rid of the maggots in the kitchen. I feel like you're going to paint the walls. Like, I feel like you're going to address the room that was on fire.
You have a rat infestation of epic proportions upstairs.
Not to mention, okay, I understand that Julia has never been in this house, so she was exploring, but why she spent so much time up in that room. And then, you know, he went up there like, oh, my God, I cut my hand. Blech.
I think they implied that that was the room that her and Frank used to get down in.
She's never been in that house
before. Yeah, she has.
That's not the way I took it.
No, because there was a flashback later on in the movie where she answers the door and she has longer hair, and Frank comes to the door. He's like, "Is my brother Larry around?" And she's like, "Who are you?" She's like, "I'm Frank. I'm his brother." And then all of a sudden,
yeah, but I don't think it was that house.
It was definitely that house. Same door, same.
Why would they move out then?
I don't know.
Whatever.
I don't know. I got the impression that the parents had maybe passed away and left the house to Frank, or they moved to the city because of their jobs, but now the husband had a new job, and that's why he wanted to move back to what I'm guessing it was like a Staten Island kind of thing.
Well, you know, and then either way, he drips blood on the floor, and that is the beginnings of Frank's reincarnation, I guess would be the way to put it. And that's how he escapes the grasp of Pinhead and his goons. But he doesn't fully form. He needs more blood to kind of reform as a human or some kind of human-like being, I guess. So she goes out and she starts convincing guys to come back home with her. And then she clobbers him on the head and Frank is getting stronger. There was definitely some cheese to it, but there was definitely some really cool visuals too. Like, you know, Pinhead is
an iconic villain.
He is one of the most iconic from the 80s. And my problem with that is he's not really in the movie. I feel like they needed to focus more on Pinhead and the lady with like the split neck, and then the they could have done without the fat guy with the eyes sewn shut. That guy wasn't that cool looking. But the other guy with like the mouth that was all torn open, that guy looks like the cover of Destruction's Release from Agony or whatever.
Yes.
Now, I think if they would have focused more on those guys torturing and killing people, like this movie would have been way better. But the simple fact that like you see him a little bit here, a little bit there, kind of, I don't want to say ruined it. I just feel like they should have been the focal point, not Frank.
I feel like that was what made the movie stand out a little more, because rather than have it be like Freddy Krueger where, you know he's the villain right away. I mean, the only reason I knew the only reason I knew Pinhead was the villain, and I don't even know if he's really the villain in this movie, is because I've seen the posters for 30 years.
Right.
Other than that, if I had gone in completely blind, never having any knowledge of this movie, I would have been like, this guy's the best. Oh, my God.
That's my point, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's on the cover. He's on all the posters. Everybody knows who he is. But theoretically, he's not really a villain. Frank sought out their little world, and he got what he went for. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, all he was doing, you know, for lack of better terms, made a deal with the devil, and these guys came and got him, did whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were doing what they do, but they don't seek it out. You have to come to them.
Well, he said he was seeking a higher plane of pain meeting pleasure, and that's what he got. But once he got there, it was more than he could bear, and now he was essentially trapped there for all of eternity until Larry cut his hand on a nail.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and that was super, like, just cheeseball, where you had three guys in the biggest stairwell possible, and they couldn't get a mattress upstairs. Like,
well, here's the thing. Who hires movers and then tries to help? Like, you hire movers because you don't want to do anything.
That's definitely a good point, too. But, like, and I don't know, maybe I'm a little jaded because I worked in a furniture warehouse for so long back in my Ute,
oh, my God.
But, I mean, I don't know. Struggling with that was just very, very
wrong. I kept thinking the entire time with the mattress going, you have these two guys, which, I mean, for lack of better terminology, they're grunts.
Yeah.
They're physical activity kind of workers. They're not going to write the next great American novel. They're not going to split the atom.
Hey, you don't know what Biff is doing at his time off.
Bruno and Greg. And here comes Larry with his sweater vest. Let me help, guys. Like, get out. Larry, you're in the way.
Yeah.
That's what should have happened. But, of course, they kind of made it seem sort of more sensible because the daughter comes in and she's 16 years old. Or, you know, what's that Winger song? She's only 17.
That part was so bad.
Right. And, you know, the movers.
Hey, baby.
Movers are like, hey, baby, like these muscles? How old's your daughter there, Larry? Leave my daughter alone, you scoundrels.
Yeah, right.
Larry. Larry was the worst. Actually, when the movie was over, it made sense. But the whole first half of the movie, I'm going, who picked Larry and why? Because Larry is terrible. He is, like, not sympathetic. He's the living incarnation of Ned Flanders, except not as awesome.
I don't know. I feel like Larry, as bad as he was, I feel the wife was just a little worse.
The entire movie, I kept thinking, how did she, even with her complete one-dimensional personality, come to marry Larry? Because Larry is awful.
Yeah.
I mean, she's awful in her own way, but at least, you know, you could see men desiring her. I can't see a single woman on the planet going, man, Larry, he looks like a less interesting Randy Quaid.
Man, I feel like you focused a lot on Larry. I don't even remember what he looks like. It's only been like 2 days.
I'm telling you, Larry is the living, breathing Ned Flanders, but not awesome. Ned Flanders is awesome in his way, whereas Larry is just not good. He's not good at all.
I mean, overall, some of the, like when Frank was first coming to be in the attic, you can tell it was the 80s. But I mean, overall, like with the costume design and some of the effects later on, like I was pretty impressed for 1987.
As far as the special effects go?
No, God, no. Those were terrible. As far as like the lightning around the box and the stupid stuff like that, like no, that was definitely 80. But I'm just saying, like, the costume designs and the voice of Pinhead and like all the fat guy just annoyed me. I don't know why. He just seemed like it seemed like more of a comedy thing than it did a horror thing. Whereas Pinhead, that's
a good character.
You know what I'm saying? And the guy with the face, and then the lady with like the vagina neck.
The one that kept going, "We're here for you, Frank."
There were, I think, some really just cool-looking, evil-looking characters. So, I mean, I don't know. I
blame this movie for spawning the 90s, though.
What?
All the goth rock and all the industrial and leather and all the faux S&M garb that permeated the entire decade. I blame this movie for that now. Because this movie
there were just a couple of teenagers sitting around watching this, and then you're like, I got it. Einstürzte Neubauten. Let's start it.
Yes. Pretty much. Marilyn Manson. Rob Zombie. All this is this movie's fault. I blame this movie entirely for all that.
Now I have to give the movie a zero then, because that stuff was pretty much the worst.
Nine Inch Nails, all that stuff.
Oh, my God. I still don't understand how that guy was a thing. Because
of Hellraiser. I'm telling you, this movie is solely responsible.
I'm sure we'll get some hate mail for that, because I know for some odd reason people love Nine Inch Nails. But
90s goth culture came from this movie alone.
It's possible, yeah.
This movie was an S&M fanatic's wet dream. Sorry to be graphic, but that's pretty much what it was. This was a serious fetish movie disguised as a horror movie.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
The whole pain meeting pleasure and all the hooks and all the...
Well, yeah, but it's not... I mean, you saw that stuff for
a few
minutes.
The rack spinning and, yeah, the body modification stuff. This movie was inspired at all, I'm convinced.
Well, I guess that could be what you don't like about it.
If not for Hellraiser, we'd still be living in a Don Johnson era with white...
Oh, I don't know about that.
With pink shirts and white suits, driving around in convertibles, listening to... bad synthesizer music.
That's what I don't understand about the good old days. Like, how did people wear white clothes? If I buy something white now, like, by the time I, like, finish putting it on, I look, I'm like, damn it, how did I get dirt on it already?
Well, you know how people think they're going to be millionaires now? Like, the reason why they want taxes to be super low is because they think they're just around the corner from being a millionaire themselves. I think back then people thought, well, when Don Johnson eats a hot dog and mustard squirts out of the hot dog towards his suit, it stops like an inch before and then turns around and falls on the ground, because that's how awesome Don Johnson is. He's too cool to have mustard on him.
So he has a mustard barrier?
Yeah, he's like a mustard barrier. So I think people thought, if I wear that suit, I'll be cool like Don Johnson, and I'll have a mustard barrier. Well, then they find out pretty quick when they're walking around with yellow and red splotches all over their white suit that, no, there's no mustard barrier. You're just not Don Johnson, and you're not on TV. Swish.
I got nothing.
We have officially derailed over the canyon at this point.
I mean, what other thoughts can there possibly be on this? I mean,
on this movie?
Yeah, I mean,
well, when Frank first reemerged, well, first of all, the whole heart between the floorboards immediately, and I'm not saying this as someone who has read it because I haven't, but immediately I thought this was Clive Barker trying to do his version of the Telltale Heart, and I referenced that mostly from The Simpsons.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
Take this for what it is. But that's, like, I thought this is him trying to, you know, have his own version of the classic horror story, except in a much cheesier, you know, synthesizer way.
Here's another thing I didn't quite understand. When Frank was, I don't want to say fully formed, but, you know, when he was getting pretty close, he still made her bring the dude up there and bash the skull in. Like, I feel like he could have killed him on his own at that point.
Like Frank,
but he's just like hiding in the corner. And the best part is the last guy they brought up there, like Frank was hiding in the corner. You could clearly see him.
You could clearly see him every time he was hiding.
Not as bad as the last time. It was like he didn't even really try. And it's just like, and then the guy just strolls in, like they meet eyes, and he just like looks away, and it was like, well, so bam. Oh, my God. It's like, dude, how did you not see that? Like,
but when he's dragging himself across the floorboards, it was light enough in that room to where any guy walking in, like, for example, the bald guy that, you know, took his pants off, like, immediately.
That was weird.
He's like, what, we're not going to do this now? And he's, like, ready to choke. Wait, all right, hold on. Back up a
little
bit.
He was trying to be, like, the rational rapist?
Yeah, pretty much.
You don't want any of this?
The gentleman... Whatever, assaulter.
Right.
Is that a word? It is now. No, when he's dragging himself across the floor, it's clearly light in that room, at least light enough to be able to see, you know, the mice and the dirt and the grime everywhere. How do you not see this, like, three-quarter shriveled up body in the corner on the floor and then not turn around and go, really? No, I'm not here. Don't look at me. But when he first emerges, he kind of gives off the vibe of he's a sympathetic character who made a mistake and he wants to redeem himself. He's all like, bring me back to life. I know the only way to do this. And you have to bring them to me and don't look at me. Like, kind of like the wolf man almost. Like, you feel sorry for him. He's been inflicted with this curse and he just wants to redeem himself and reverse the mistake he made. But then as the movie goes on, he just turns into Uncle Pervert Pants.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
As he becomes stronger, he starts going, bring me my niece. Let me lick her. It's like, oh, dude.
You remember your Uncle Frankie? What up, baby?
Come to daddy. Oh. So disgusting.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's what I'm saying. This was an S&M pervert's wet dream, this movie, because it was all Uncle Pervert and leather and hooks. And I'm sorry, that monster in the corridor when the girl's in the hospital and the wall opens up, that thing was as phallic as could possibly be.
You want to know my biggest problem with that?
And the guy that you hate, he was also extremely phallic to me. Like, the whole time I'm like, that's why he's in this movie. Not because he's, oh, scary monsters. Because, oh, I need a walking
dong.
Pretty much.
Here's the one thing that I tried to focus most on in the corridor scene. I was so looking at, like, the bottom to see, like, the feet of the guy pushing it down the hall, and I didn't see it, so I was a little impressed by that. I was expecting to see the guy controlling it, and I didn't.
You see some guy popping in and out of the shadows, like, move his arms!
Right.
You see the REO Speedwagon sweater.
But, yeah, it was like a weird phallic scorpion of some sort with arms. It was weird. It had like a head on one side and a stinger on the other and arms
and a face, and it was just,
it was weird.
If it was like lizard skin, you'd never would have thought that, but because it was fleshy and looked like a wiener You're just like, that's a wiener. It's a screaming wiener with vampire teeth.
Yeah.
And scorpion body parts. It was just super. The whole movie was one big, I don't know, pervert fest. I'm not saying like, oh my God, it offended me. I'm saying like, it's super obvious. How could you miss that? How could you look maybe at that movie and go, no, it's good. It's a horror movie. It's totally fine. Let's bring the whole family in. No. No, this is not something you show your kids till they're at least 30.
Man, settle down. Maybe you're just a little too depraved and you just see that and everything.
It was so unbelievably obvious. Like I said, just the simple fact that he's like, come to daddy.
Oh, yeah. There
or
was
when he becomes Larry.
And yeah.
He's like, hey, Janie or whatever, come to daddy. And she's like, oh, dude.
Yeah. It was a little
There
creepy.
Was emphasis on certain words and there, certain there phrasings.
Was,
and
there was
just
some creeping going on. There's no doubt.
The whole movie was just dripping with this forbidden sexual component aspect. The whole cheating on the brother and Captain, you know, Frank's got all these risque photos of all these women that he's been with and done unspeakable acts with. The whole movie revolved around, you know, forbidden sexual acts. It was super obvious.
Okay.
There's no way anyone could convince me otherwise.
I think the fourth time you kind of hammered it home already.
I know, but you're saying you think I see it as in I'm looking for that, where I'm trying to explain to you. This whole movie was just dripping with it.
So I take it that's what you didn't like about it. It offended
No,
your
actually,
sexuality.
That, no, that didn't. I didn't. It didn't affect my ultimate score when we get to that, one way or the other. I'm just saying, if I had watched this movie when I was like 12, I would have taken it as a horror movie. I would not have seen all the sexual innuendo. But now, having seen it for the first time in 20 years, and I only saw it one time before, and I don't really remember that much. Now I don't see, I mean, the gore is obviously what it is, but I never got the vibe of horror from this movie. I completely got the vibe of S&M sexual mania the whole time. It was like 90 minutes of it. There was, like, the very beginning I started feeling, oh man, this is like my kind of horror movie. It's like kind of cheesy, but kind of dark and kind of eerie, and then all of a sudden it exploded into this S&M pervert fest, and it never stopped. So I was like, oh, that's what this is. This is, you know, skinny puppy and underground dance clubs with leather and people in cages. If you don't see it, then, you know.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't
not you.
There.
I mean anybody listening. If anyone disagrees with me, feel free to tweet me and tell me I'm absolutely wrong, but I don't know. I'm feeling like that's what this movie was.
All right, so do you have anything that you thoroughly dislike then?
I didn't really understand. I'm not saying I dislike this. I didn't really understand the significance of the homeless guy that looked like Alan Moore that was following the daughter around.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Like, she's walking down the alley with her boyfriend, and come on, this guy was the worst boyfriend ever.
I barely
No girl is going to date this nerd. I'm just saying. He looks like a flock of seagulls reject. There's no way anyone, any decent-looking woman's going to be like, oh, he's really cool. No, he's a great dancer. But the Alan Moore guy's in the doorway, and he's staring at her all creepily.
He was in the pet store.
Yeah, and then he comes
like
in the pet
eating
store.
Eating birds or something in the back.
He comes in the pet store where she works. He's eating out of the cricket's cage. And then she throws him out of the store. And he goes out of the store without a fight at all. He's sitting there eating crickets out of the tank. And she's like, get out of here. And she's shoving him out the door. And he's just voluntarily. But then he happens to, they kind of hint that he grabs a bird out of the cage and just whoop. And then he shows up at the end of the movie and dies. And you're like, I don't get what that guy, what is his purpose in this movie?
Well, I believe at the end he jumped into the fire to grab the box. Then he kind of.
Oh, that's right. He turned
burned
into
up
the,
or whatever.
He turned into the pterodactyl from
Penny's
Playhouse.
Right. And then the next thing you know, the box is being sold to somebody else or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The box lives. It's all about the box. Also.
Oh,
and then
totally,
you
yeah.
Although, I'm not going to, you know, if you're not old enough, I'm not going to explain that. But, yeah, this whole movie was nothing but innuendo and racist. Let's not forget that it was racist. I just wanted to say that. It's not really.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I don't remember that. But
actually, it kind of was, though, because the Chinese guy had the super, like, stereotypical voice that white people think Chinese people sound like when they talk, which is super racist.
I don't remember that, but how do you know that wasn't the guy's real voice?
It could have been. I don't know. I'm just
You're being racist.
Now I'm looking for things to be racist. I agree with that.
All right.
Take it back.
But so does that mean if you were going to do something different, you would just get rid of all the weird sexual stuff?
Well, we never touched on what I dislike, though, other than the Alan Moore guy.
Oh, you got more?
Well, that wasn't the... I didn't dislike that. I just didn't understand it. Did you dislike anything about this movie?
Outside of a couple of the actors? Not especially.
Not especially. What? Okay. This, if I disliked anything, and this isn't necessarily a knock on the movie itself, but the fact that this house is rat infested and no one addressed it. Like, they mentioned it a couple times, but nobody called an exterminator. It was like, what are you doing?
Never called an exterminator. They've got the money to hire movers, but they didn't hire, like, painters. They didn't clean anything. They just moved into this abandoned house. Like, I don't know. I do feel like that was poorly in there, because especially since the wife seemed so hoity-toity.
Right.
So for her to just be like, oh, honey, don't go into the kitchen. There's a bowl full of maggots, you know. Oh, okay. I'll just stay in the burnt attic. It was
weird.
Just,
I mean... Some of the dialogue was cheesy, but that's a horror movie from the 80s. You can't expect, great writing necessarily. I don't know. I mean, there were moments where the story felt like it was derailing. It felt like three quarters of the way through the movie, they made the movie about the daughter. They made her the focal point, and they didn't really have a seemingly good reason to do so, when the wife was clearly the focus of getting Frank to return from his, I don't know, death sentence. There was really nothing about it that I guess I disliked intensely. I mean, for what it is, it was a decent... It was better than I expected in some ways, which is weird, because I feel like at this point, unless it's something I'm already familiar with, I kind of go in with at least middle-of-the-road expectations when it comes to horror.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Because here's the problem with horror in general for me, which is weird to say since we're doing all horror movies this month. When it's something I've never seen, I feel like I've seen so many horror movies now, the excitement of getting scared is so in the rearview mirror at this point.
I feel like they used to try to actually make movies scary, whereas now they just try to shock everybody, you know, with either extreme gore, or, you know, they'll turn around a few dark corners until all of a sudden it's like, boo, and then everybody jumps, and then it's like, yep, we scared them. You're not going to have nightmares off of that.
Right.
You know, I feel like they're not genuinely scary for the most part anymore. Maybe it's because, maybe I've seen too many, maybe they're just
not as good anymore, or maybe you're just you get to a certain age where
I've seen it all, I've done it all.
I don't feel like there's good villains, and I feel like every good villain from the 80s, they've been turned into action figures and lunchboxes through 87 sequels and, you know, them popping up on Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
although after watching this movie, I could see why Hellraiser hasn't exactly turned into Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger. This movie was a lot more brutal than those other movies.
Yeah, but I still feel that the first two Halloweens were genuinely, like, scary.
Oh, yeah, they actually are.
They're the only ones I can think of off the top of my head.
But they have good atmosphere, and they have a great soundtrack to back it up, though.
Right, right.
It's not, you know, nothing against them, because they're one of my favorite bands, but they don't have Iron Maiden in the soundtrack. Or the Scorpions.
What does that have to do with it?
That's not horror movie music. When I see
right, but where have you seen any of that in movies?
Demons, Phenomena by Dario Argento. Iron Maiden is the soundtrack. So what's, you know, when the girl is running down the hallway from monsters, it's kind of loses its edge when it's too, you know, Aces High or whatever it is. Or I think Demons had Fast as a Shark from UFO. or accept one of those bands. I don't German heavy metal bands.
Well, you got to give it to people like Argento and whatnot then for using just the creepiest organ stuff or just
from Goblin. Yeah, back when he did use them.
Yeah.
So back to what we would do differently.
Yeah, I think that's where we're on now.
I can
lead it if you'd like.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is going to sound silly because he's not exactly the greatest actor either, but I think if you're going to go so cheesy and terrible with Larry, you need to use Barry Bostwick instead.
Oh, my God. Barry Bostwick would have been amazing as Larry.
I'm just saying, especially in that time frame, because that was... This movie was, what, 2 or 3 years after the Rocky Horror?
Oh, so it was way after that.
No, Rocky Horror was 75. This was, oh, you're right, this was 87.
It was 12 years. But Barry Bostwick was in Spin City in the 90s, so it's not like he stopped acting.
Well, I'm just, no, it's not that, I just don't, he has to look young still, like he did in Rocky Horror. So, I feel that, like, that look of Barry Bostwick in Larry, it would have been okay to be that cheesy because of the fact that he is awesome and...
Could have just got Larry Dallas.
He would have made a better hobo eating crickets and stuff and or one of the movers hitting on the daughter. Hey, I got a used car for you.
You want to go to the Regal Beagle? Who wants to go on a Grunion run with Uncle Larry?
Other than that, I do think I would have focused more on the, I guess, demons, you know, as far as Pinhead and all of them, his little pin crew, hooks, face hookies, hook faces, whatever you want to call them. I think you should have focused more on them and them torturing people.
I think what it would have been better, the wife was so, she was such the cold personality. Like, even as she was helping bring Frank back to life, and she was bringing these men back to the house. She wasn't exactly alluring in terms of, like, getting these men to buy into her whole pitch of, hey, come home, my husband's at work, let's get naked. But she was just, she dealt with all of that like it was a business transaction. Like, so you want to buy the calculator? Yes, it sounds like a great deal. She never... I mean, she kind of did it at moments, but I thought maybe if you had an actress who kind of pushed herself more to as she was helping to kill more and more of these men that she started to actually get turned on by. I mean, you're already in the S&M realm. You might as well really just go for it at that point.
Wow.
But then, like, a woman who, like, gets more, who feels more betrayed at the end when she's like, when he's like, it's all right, babe. It was never about you or whatever he said when he sucked her life force out. And she's like, no, Frank. And then the thing, here's another thing that bothered me, too, about her. When he became Frank as Larry, she was still, like, turned on by him. It's like, you were disgusted by this rubber-faced goofball you were married to, and now your super sexy, sadomasochistic boyfriend is wearing the goofy guy's face, and you're like, ooh, me and Frank, we're going to run away. No, you're running away with Flary or Frary or Lank or whatever. I mean, granted, he was Captain Pervert, but he was wearing Larry's face. And Larry was the guy you were trying to get away from. So how can you be turned on by Larry after, or Frank, what, Frank Larry, Larry Frank, who it doesn't even matter at this point. but I think if you had a woman who became more crazed as the movie went on, that would have been more effective.
Or, you know, an actress who, you know, acted at all would be nice instead of the deadpan, oh, I can't do that. Oh, my God, Frank, you're so hot. Oh, my God, go away, daughter and stupid girl.
She did act like she was the boring lawyer on Knott's Landing or something.
Yeah, she was. She had pretty much zero range. She was the original Keanu Reeves.
Oh,
nailed it.
With David Bowie hair.
Anywho.
Can I buy you a drink? Yeah. You want to make out? Okay.
Ill.
Do you still love me? Yeah, whatever. You want to run away? Yeah, I guess. Enough of that.
All right, now seeing as though Pinhead is, you know, the biggest icon from this movie, got us thinking, what kind of tool or utensil or any kind of instruments of some kind could be used to create a new horror movie villain. Now, taking into account that I feel most horror movies nowadays are super cheesy, and they will do anything with anything to try to whatever. I already got, all I have is the utensil and the tagline. I don't have the whole story written out, but yeah, use a pen, and it's, the pen is mightier than the sword, because it's totally cheesy, and somehow, I don't know if every time the villain writes something down, that's how that person dies, or if he just runs around, you know, Tommy and people in the neck with a knife, like Goodfellas.
He could write their name in the Book of Death.
Oh my God! Nice.
Well, mine is about a half-human, half-monster who eats people, so people start disappearing from this town, and everyone's wondering, what happened to Billy? What happened to Larry? What happened to Sally? And then they start finding, like, clothing items and bones laying around, and then you find out they're being eaten alive by, drumroll, Spatular, a monster with spatula hands, which is why he's killing and eating people, because he's got spatulas for hands, so he can fry them up and flip them.
And his sidekick is Panhead. Get it?
He's cooking him on his sidekick's face.
Yes.
Pan face. Panhead, whatever, yeah. All right, I could get into that.
Nail this.
Spatular. Somebody want to talk to me about money? Let's do it.
All right, so on top of that, also, how about things people are obsessed with? We'll come up with a couple of obsessions that can be turned into like a new theme or, you know, whatever, a new story for horror. I feel like this one may have been done already, but I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But this stupid obsession with people taking selfies could easily be turned into, like, that, what was that other dumb movie where after the kid died, like, he was sending emails, and then if you got an email from the dead kid, then you were dead next or something. I don't know. They could do the same.
Oh, similar. I remember. I thought you were talking about, they made a Facebook horror movie called something like Unfriended. Or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I just saw it on Netflix.
But I know what you're talking about, too, the horror movie with the emails.
Yeah, I forget the name of it, but it's stupid. But this one would be stupid too. But I mean, let's face it. It could be something where somebody buys a phone that, you know, like they got the tribes in the middle of nowhere who think that when you take their picture, they think like you stole their soul. Like this thing, this new phone, actually, when you take a selfie, does steal your soul somehow, and you turn into some kind of like murderous zombie thing.
All right.
I don't know. Something. Make it happen, Hollywood.
Well, my first one is gardening, because, you know, people are all obsessed with their gardens, and, oh, I take pictures of my garden and my vegetable garden, my flower beds, and blah, blah, blah. We could have some crazy person who's into gardening that finds that human, ground-up human makes for great fertilizer, so they start killing their neighbors and grinding them up and then fertilizing their garden with the remains. It'll be like a dark comedy, like The Burbs meets Fargo meets
Dead Alive.
I don't know. Now I'm going to find out gardening's not really an obsession. It's just a hobby. You monster. I'm like, all right, fine.
So this one I'm pretty sure has never been done, but it goes to all the people who are, you know, go to the gym 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, fucking working out, and bleh, basically they shoot up enough steroids, they work out so much that they turn into one gigantic muscle that either suffocates them or turns them into some kind of a weird, unstoppable killing machine, or I don't know, something with working out and lifting weights and getting big and buff and overdoing it, and I don't know.
Uncle Buff.
I don't have a tagline for this one, though.
Sweatpants killer? I don't know. My number two is foodies. It'll be kind of like The Mad Butcher meets a cannibal movie from the 70s where, you know, somebody figures out that human flesh is a great delicacy that goes great with, I don't know, rice, quinoa, kale, vegetables, pasta, etc. So, you know, they start.
You go to a restaurant and get children cacciatore.
Ooh, now you just went way dark with it.
I'm just saying, you're going to eat people.
It's better to eat guys like Larry.
Ew.
Guys that no one's going to miss. You're that guy down the road that won't let anyone borrow
on The Simpsons, they started grounding up the kids and feeding it to everybody.
Oh, yeah. You'll say there's a little ooter in all of us. I mean, you might even say we ate ooter. Oh, I think I said too much. Yeah, I like that, but not eating kids necessarily. You know, eating the weird guy down the block that won't let anyone borrow the lawnmower. He's a jerk. No one will miss him, and then we can have his lawnmower. Nailed it. You're staring off into space. You're like,
oh, I am.
This is a great movie idea.
No,
it's actually terrible.
The next one.
It's great in its own way.
My last one, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned already in the last couple of weeks when we talked about stuff like this, but I really feel that this shouldn't happen. But, you know, people's obsession with money. And like I said, you can do it multiple ways. You could do it to where, you know, the rich finally have it all, and then the poor peons all rise up and start ripping them apart. Or you can do it to where, like, they start going mad and they start killing off each other. I don't know. Something that has to do with the obsession of money.
All right. Let's call it money. My number one movie would be about comic book collecting. Seeing as though we do a comic book podcast and we're fans of the medium, I thought if you had a comic book man type character from The Simpsons, and this actually is a ripoff of The Simpsons episode now that I'm thinking about it, where the person becomes so obsessed with these characters, they start going to conventions and seeing people dressed in cosplay. So they drug them and kidnap them and then put them in gigantic poly bags in their basement and or shed. And the people all die. But he's got permanent relics of his favorite comic book characters in giant life-size poly bags. So it's like Zardoz meets the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Or like basketball, when they go to that guy's office and he's got like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar sitting in a glass case.
Oh, yeah.
Except he's not dead. He punches in and out.
Could have been action figures.
Yeah.
But there'll be no punching in or out. Nobody's getting paid for this. This is pure sadism. That's not a word. I know. Why are you saying that? I don't know. Anyway.
All right. Well, I feel like we should have numbered the movie before we went that far.
I was going to say that, but
I didn't even think about it.
You decided to reroute, so I just went with it.
That's what I do. I'm like a bad GPS.
You zig, I zag, spin move, backflip into the end zone.
Another horror movie.
I just made a sports reference.
All right, so I'd say at least it attempted. I feel like it did a fairly decent job as far as like the gore and the effects for being 1987. It did get a little weird. It did get a little too cheesy at times. I'm just gonna give it like a 5.
Wow,
it was decent.
That's not a decent score. That's a...
No, that's average. That's a 5 is average.
That's right in the middle. That's not a good score.
That's a C.
That's like a D.
No. A D would be a 4 or a 3.
How do you go from a 5 to a 4 being a C to an F? There's no D.
I said they were a D.
Oh, all right.
1 and 2 is F.
All right.
3 and 4 is E.
Well... I kind of landed on this score pretty early on in the movie, and it never flittered either way afterwards. It kind of stayed right where I kind of saw it landing. Again, it was a little cheesy. It was very fetish driven, and the gore was impressive, not so much because the effects were realistic, but because it had my kind of gore effects, cheesy rubber latex and goofy stop motion animation type stuff. The story was just good, wasn't really great, but it definitely gave you a couple moments where you'd go, oh, that was disgusting. And not in because, oh my God, the visuals, but more because the ideas behind some of the scenes, etc. I actually think I'd give it a 7. It was actually... had a couple funny parts. I don't think that was intentional, but, you know, I laughed. And the gore was entertaining, and the movie was never boring, so I'm at a 7. Even when it started not making sense, even within itself, I was still like, "Nah, it's completely gone off on a side quest without telling anyone." But it's still entertaining. The weird corridor that looked like a plastic backdrop.
I will agree. I had no idea they made 7 of these movies. I knew there were 3. I didn't know they went beyond that. So, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever watch all 7, but, I mean...
Oh, I'm not going to watch all 7.
I'd be fine with watching 2 and 3. I don't really care. Whatever.
Yeah, they kept making them up until, like, 2006. I had no idea. I know they made one in the late 90s, because I remember seeing stuff online for it, but...
Yeah. Yeah, you saw it when you logged on to your AOL, nerd.
It was my CompuServe account, actually.
Or BlueLight.com.
BlueLight.com, exactly.
All right. I know you guys are all clamoring for The Wizard of Gore, which we announced last week, but we've actually changed it because I've been hearing so much about this Babadook that we're going to do that one for Friday. So if you haven't seen it, have seen it, are interested at all, that's the one we will be putting out on Friday. So until then, I am your host. You can find me on Twitter at XHorseAndX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find the show at The Comic Roast, or you can go to Facebook.com/TheComicRoast. We also have our sister website, ReviewAndRoast.com. We review movies, comic books, TV shows, all that kind of cool stuff. So check it out. Make an account. Like stuff. Hate stuff. Number stuff. Review stuff. Comment. It's a nice little fun thing to do. So we will see you Friday.
You are now leaving the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.